fell, legs blown away by the detonations.
"This is Argent Tower Control. We have received your message,"
the vox buzzed. Amon realized it had been only a few seconds since he had made his transmission. His altered physiology had made it seem far longer.
"Stand by for update. Copy broadcast to personal channel of the Captain General,"
he told the operative on the other end of the voxlink. Three swift strides took him to the junction at the end of the corridor. Blood and mud trailed left and right, two tracks leading in the first direction, one in the other. The Halfborn were faster than humans, already out of sight as he turned the corner. They were heading into the quarantine zone, which had become a shifting maze of shanty and open plague pit. He pursued as fast as he could, coming upon the two abominations about 100 meters further along the domestic palace. The third survivor would be half a kilometre away by now.
"Rapid pursuit teams required at my position," he voxed. "I need airborne support and search inbound immediately."
Hissing, hearing the thud of the custodian's boots coming upon them, the creatures turned on him. One held up its hands as though to plead for its life. The other had ripped a support bar from the rubble and swung it like a ferrocrete-headed club. The blow bounced from Amon's auramite warplate, without leaving a scratch. The creature that wielded it almost spinning from its feet as it was unbalanced by its own blow. Amon's weapon punched forward, slicing off a warding hand before entering the chest directly through the heart. The Halfborn gave a screech of pain, a chillingly human sound from such an otherworldly apparition, and slipped backwards from the vapour-wreathed blade. The second tried again to strike the custodian, heaving up its improvised club. He smashed the butt of the guardian spear into its forehead, crushing the skull and snapping its neck with one blow. Grey fluid splashed from the wound as it fell. Sparing a second to ensure both were truly dead, Amon turned on his heel and set off after the other, though he knew it was likely too late to find it by himself. Lost among the walking dead of Poxville, there was no knowing what further damage it might do, nor what others of its kind might yet appear. Himalaya, undisclosed location, day of the assault. It should have been a month of tedium and misery, but for Zenobi, the time spent at the mustering was one of the best experiences of her life. Compared to the harrowing train journey and nightmarish march that followed, spending 4 weeks cooped up with rations, shelter, and the company of her fellow troopers was almost bliss. It was better than life in Adaba. And then there was Nasha. The illicit nature of their relationship only heightened the excitement. Illicit insofar as the integrity officers warned against spending excessive time with the other regiments being held at the hidden base. A month was a long time to avoid any contact whatsoever, though, and the needs of simple decorum and logistics had required that the Adaba Free Corps acquaint themselves with their new neighbours. The local commanders had agreed to attach the Free Corps as infantry support to the reserve force, pending confirmation from High Command that seemed to have been lost somewhere in the reports. Zenobi almost stopped thinking about the battle that was being waged just 100 kilometres away. The noise of bombardment, the flights of aircraft overhead, were constant reminders, but just as the reflex shields kept the reserve base undetected, so its inhabitants were isolated from the ongoing bloodshed.
"What if we never get called up to the fight?"
she asked Nasha after one of their midnight couplings. It was still cold, their hot breath fogging the air, sweaty bodies layered in coveralls and coats that had doubled as bedding a few minutes earlier. They lay in the dark underneath an empty supply transport, not far from the lot of Breath of Wrath. Everything was in blackout to help maintain the cover of the reflex shield. The less energy it had to absorb, the greater its effectiveness, she had learned. What was good for remaining undiscovered on the larger scale applied equally well to the small scale, affording her ample cover to make her clandestine rendezvous.
"Would that be so bad?"
he replied, lying with his hand behind his head, his chest making a pillow for her.
"You don't want to be part of the fighting?"
"I don't want to die, if that's what you mean."
"No. I mean, do you want to fight for what you believe in, or let others do it for you?"
"That sounds like an accusation."
"It's not."
She stroked his face.
Our futures are being decided, and we're just sitting here, not involved at all. I don't want to be on the losing side just because someone forgot we are here.
There's a plan. Dawn commissioned this secret muster personally. He'll deploy us when we're needed.
If we're needed. When will that be, though?
It wasn't the first time she'd asked the question, and she knew she was sounding increasingly petulant each time.
I'm not in a hurry to leave. Not leave you. But I want to do my part.
Do you think you can make a difference?
Why do people keep asking that?
There's less than 6,000 of you left in the Free Corps. There must be as many tanks, transports, and armored walkers in here as you have people. And we're the tiniest fraction of the Imperial Army's might in the Himalaya.
I work on the line. Everything has a place. Everything is balanced and timed and has a rhythm. A small disruption, the least amount of change, can cause catastrophe. It's not just about how many of us are still alive. It's about where we are, when we fight. We'll die trying, anyway. Better that, if you ask me.
You think you'll die? She shifted as she sat up.
It's a certainty. Like you said, there's not many of us. Enough to swing a battle, but only if every last one of us is ready to lay down our life.
She sighed and swiveled to sit next to him, her hand on his thigh.
I never expected to have this long.
Don't you have something you'd like to live for? Maybe someone? She grinned and punched him lightly on the arm.
If it was different, then of course I'd want to live. But I wouldn't trade the future of Adaba for this happiness. Not even for you, my beautiful man.
He looked at her for some time, perhaps memorizing her features, perhaps just trying to think of something to say. She let the silence stay, relishing the quiet she knew could not last much longer. A couple of hours later she parted from Nasha with a last kiss, then made her way back towards the camp of the Free Corps. Though it was almost as dark as an underspersed sewer, she made her way unerringly through the maze of tanks, tents, and roads. She crossed a berm separating the Adaba companies from several platoons of the Nor Alba Steel Watch, and turned left to avoid the checkpoint at the junction 100 meters ahead. She froze as a voice issued from the darkness.
"A nice stroll?"
Zenobi said nothing, weighing up her options. She could bolt and hope that she hadn't been recognized. She could see nothing of the other person, and it was likely only her footsteps had betrayed her presence.
"Have you been to see Nasha, Zenobi?"
She swore as she recognized the voice of Ketai. Zenobi swung towards the sound, a snarl building in her throat.
"Breaking curfew is serious. Socializing with outsiders even more serious."
"What do you care? It's not like you haven't broken a few rules in your time. Turn me into the integrity officers, and maybe I'll let them in on a few of your secrets."
His laugh was low, almost a hint of menace in his humor.
"What's so funny, Ketai?"
"You really don't know."
His next laugh was more fulsome. She heard footsteps. A shuttered lantern flickered into life to her right, revealing his flat face, but little else. Flecks of snow and ash fell through the yellow glow.
"You must be the only one left in the platoon who hasn't figured it out."
"Figured out what?"
"I'm with the integrity officers," he grinned. "Hidden in plain sight, I hear, is the expression. A spy. There's an old phrase for it. An agent provocateur. Testing from within. Offering the temptation before it becomes vital."
"So, everything you've been saying was a trick? Trying to lure me into giving myself away?"
"Not you particularly, Ye-Ye. Everyone. You're a remarkable soldier. Nothing swerved you from the course."
"Nothing until now, you mean?"
He stepped closer, just a few paces away.
"Nasha is rather handsome. Obviously, he's not inclined in my direction, so I'll never know anything more than that. But I can see why you would want to have a little fun before the killing and dying starts."
"Are you going to report me? For socializing? I've told him nothing."
"You don't know anything to tell him."
"That's a good point. But please, it's not done any harm, has it?"
"Some might say the disobedience itself was the harm."
Zenobi didn't say anything. As when she'd seen Jawahir the first time, she knew that any further conversation just opened the way for more possible recriminations. He'd already decided. Any resistance would just make matters worse.
"You seem calm," he said.
"What else should I be? It's up to you what happens next. What am I going to do? Kill you? like to Edrastride? Run away to—'
She waved a hand vaguely behind her.
"'To where? To do what?'
Ketai smiled and shook his head, a sort of impressed disbelief.
"'Egu chose you well. You've got a spine of titanium in that little body of yours, and a heart that burns like forge fire. You know that you could have your throat slit for this, and you just face up to it. No worries at all?'
"'I'm worried,'
she admitted.
"'I'm worried I'll die before I get a chance to make a difference for Adaba. But the death itself? That's not anything to be scared of.'
"'Well, you'll not have to worry any longer.'
He took a step back and half-turned, raising the lantern to light her way between two privy blocks. She hesitated.
"'On your way, Yeye. I trust you to fight for the cause more than I trust myself.'
"'But I'll have to stop seeing Nasha.'
He shrugged.
"'Why? You've got a good thing. Why spoil it? Just remember that in an hour, a day, or a week, we could get the command. And from that moment on, it's Adaba first and nothing else. Nothing.
I know that.
Well, of course you do. Get going!'
She gave him a long look as she walked past, searching for deceit in his face, but saw none. When she was concealed by darkness again, relief crested through her feelings and erupted as a broad grin. Chapter 27 Desperate Times. The Power of Faith. No Stragglers. Palatine Ark Quarantine Zone. 18 days since assault. Katsuhiro wept as he fired. He had thought himself sapped of all emotion by his experiences, but the sight before him plumbed a depth of self-loathing he had not known before. The orders given to him and the hundreds of other troopers that lined the quarantine walls were brutally simple. Destroy all targets. That had been his life for the past 2.5 days. 60 hours of near-continuous duty as the living and the dead tried to break out of Poxville, time spared only to catch naps and meal breaks on the wall. It wasn't as though everything had happened all at once. The malaise had spread slowly. First they had come in ones and twos, then larger groups. 2 hours ago there had been a surge, hundreds of vacant-eyed corpses juddering towards the walls, a few living amongst them, screaming for help, trying to dash free of the nightmare gripping the quarantine ghetto. Nothing was to reach the wall, whether warp-tainted or human. It was impossible to tell, the officers had said, who was carrying the seed of corruption within them. So they came on in their hundreds, the plague victims and the refugees, the Medicaid that had volunteered to help them, and the self-appointed carers and families who had chosen isolation with their loved ones, fleeing the abominations in their midst. He pulled the trigger, and the las blast hit a young woman in the chest, knocking her back into a pile of corpses. Katsuhiro fancied there might be a smudge of a rash on her face, seeking the smallest justification not to hate himself every time his finger twitched. He had become quite a marksman, he realized, almost throwing up at the thought. His next target was definitely warp-infected. A limping gait and the spattering of mucus from the lolling mouth had to be evidence of taint. He swallowed hard and fired again, shooting the old man in the forehead. The fusillade had ebbed and flowed, sometimes near constant for 30 minutes at a time, then dying down to sporadic shots for an hour. Now there was just a steady rhythm to it, flashes of red and blue a few times every minute. His lasgun whined mechanically about its empty power cell, and he pulled the pack free, discarding it with the other three at his feet. Each was good for 100 shots. He slapped one of his 2 remaining packs into the weapon, charged it and lifted the stock to his shoulder again. His aim trembled, and he took a deep breath, steadying his hands.
"Just stop,"
he whispered, choking on the words.
"Oh, please, stop."
A commotion behind him caused him to turn, others of the squad doing the same. A striking woman in a flowing blue dress had mounted the rampart, a man in light-coloured robes behind her, followed by 2 women bearing large books. With them came a host of people in civilian clothing, and among them a few in uniforms from different defence regiments. They each carried a lamp, even though it was midday, as far as such a time existed in the siege gloom. The defence officers crowded close, but seemed to be greeting the new arrivals, rather than challenging their presence. They pointed to the ferrocrete battlement, and the newcomers continued on, spreading out along the stretch of wall. The woman that led them came close to Katsuhiro. She looked at him and smiled, and the sight soothed away the anguish. She held a lantern made out of an artillery shell casing, but the light seemed to emanate from her pale skin as much as the lamp.
"Let us slay the unworthy and protect the innocent," she said, her words carrying some distance along the firing line.
The thought came to Katsuhiro to step back, and he did so, shouldering his lasgun. Others also made way for the woman's silent acolytes, until the firing step was populated by them.
"Who are you, Lady of Light?"
Katsuhiro asked. An older man came forward, interposing himself between Katsuhiro and the pale figure that looked out into the devastation of Poxville.
"She is the Holy Messenger Trooper, blessed of the Emperor."
Looking at her radiance against the darkness of the broken palaces, Katsuhiro could easily believe it.
"Is it safe?"
Olivier asked, voice trembling. His gaze kept straying from Keeler to the dead and dying, heaped upon the road about 70 meters from the wall. Shambling figures moved among them, some crawling over the charnel piles, others trying to pick roots through the rubble around them.
"Of course not," she told him. "I told you we would confront the enemies of the Emperor. They do not dwell in safe places. Not in these times."
The truth seemed to reassure him more than any platitude, and he visibly calmed.
"Your strength is an inspiration," he said.
"It is the Emperor's strength, not mine. My faith connects me to him. It will connect us all to him."
Olivier looked along the curve of the wall and nodded. Here and there the spark of a lasbolt spat out into the ruins, but far fewer than when they had arrived.
"I think we are ready."
"Then raise up your voices in prayer, and let us banish this evil."
Olivier raised his voice, beginning one of his invocations. Keeler listened to her heart beating in her chest, a little faster than usual. She stared at the flame inside her shell lamp, watching the dance of light on the blackening metal. Olivier's voice became an undercurrent of her thoughts, as it had at the bastion. It was joined by the rest of the light-bearers that had come with them, nearly 400 souls. Each of them was a light, a patch of brightness in the darkness of Horus's shadow. Keeler could feel that oppressive shade laid upon the palace, as much as the twilight of ash and smoke that obscured sun and stars alike. She felt also the soul of the Emperor again, though rather than a tree, it felt more like a dome, the skies themselves. But all was not well. The dome was assailed from without, its surface blackening like the interior of the lamp, the demonic accretion growing thicker, in places enough to stifle the light from within. Keeler felt her breath coming in short gasps, panic threatening her. Almost unnoticed, a hand slipped into hers, gripping the fingers. She felt the closeness of Cinderman and relaxed. The light. She turned her thoughts to it again, taking the illumination of the Emperor and casting it as a flame in her thoughts. She let the heat build, becoming an inferno of ecstasy. She knew nothing else, not of the wall beneath her feet, the men at her side, the hundreds of souls along the wall and within the ruins. But she did see the blots, the stains on the fabric of the Emperor's vision. To these she directed the flames, her lips moving as words came unbidden to her.
"With the Emperor I am righteous. With his light the darkness is broken. With the fire of purity I purge the unholy."
"Look,"
grunted Olivier. Keeler opened her eyes. From the ruins of the Palatine Arch, dozens of figures staggered into view. Each was human-like, but obviously twisted or infected in some way. Fire burned in their skin, consuming them from inside as they flailed into the walls and fled over the rubble, bodies crumbling like ash as they fell.
"Praise the Emperor!"
Keeler shouted, feeling the power flowing through her. The call was echoed, weakly at first, and then again with greater vehemence.
"Praise the Emperor!"
The keening cries of the dying Neverborn were drowned out by the third triumphant shout, the words coming from the lips of the soldiers as well as the light-bearers.
"Praise the Emperor!"
The sudden uplift of faith swept through Keeler like a hurricane, so that it felt as though her soul ascended on a hot wind. She was borne away by it, losing the sense of her body, and in that moment she found herself flying over the gardens of faith. The great emperor tree spread its branches against a falling twilight, more somber than before. Darkening clouds gathered about the treetop, flecked with malevolent lightning. Keela raced closer, no longer walking, but with wings, like the Aquila, feathered with pure faith. For a few heartbeats she thought she might actually reach the branches that she desired so strongly, but even as she neared them her wings began to fade. She did not fall, but descended lightly to the ground, clawing at the air with her hands as though she might climb through the space between her and the emperor. Through tears she saw that the chains binding the branches to the ground had grown thicker and more numerous. Each was like a great docking cable, broader than her shoulders, and she thought she could make out writing etched into every link. She fell back into her body before she could read the words. It took some time before she reacquainted herself with her physical form, though it must have been only moments since her departure. She sat down, back against the battlement. Cinderman bent over her with concern. She gave him a smile of assurance, but could not speak, robbed of words by her experience. The former iterator deterred others that tried to crowd closer, Olivier among them. One of the troopers approached from the other side, the slight-looking man that had spoken to her before.
"What's that?"
He stared back over the wall.
"How did that happen?"
Keela held out her hand, and the man helped her to her feet.
"The Emperor protects,"
she told him, handing him the shell lamp. She raised her voice, addressing Olivier and the others nearby.
"There will be other times we are needed, when the evil of Horus and his allies takes form. Our faith will be the light that banishes them back to the abyss that spawns them."
Lionsgate Spaceport, Tropifex Corps, 19 days since assault. Pushing forward into the brightly lit monorail terminal in the company of his warriors, Forex saw the tunnel at the end of the light. Three lines ran across his advance, separated by broad platforms broken by rows of pillars. A flurry of bolt-arounds greeted the arrival of the Iron Warriors, shattering the tiles on the wall and the entrance gate, slamming into armour already much punished. Yellow-armoured foes lurked behind many of the columns and along the sunken trackbeds. The crack of bolt-guns and crunch of armoured boots on shattered tiles echoed back and forth across the open station. The warriors of the 4th Legion split, breaking left towards the tunnels and directly ahead to the nearest foes. The noise of their bolters sounded wrong in Forex's ear, like coughs instead of barks, as close to the point of failing as those that carried them. Likewise, their armour whined and creaked and moaned with every movement, hissing and snarling from battle damage and lack of maintenance. Forex's own armour had seized at the left ankle, giving him an awkward limp. For the past 400 meters of the advance, he had adopted an almost crabwise gait, bolter pulled tight to his left pauldron, sighting by naked eye along its length.
"If you fall behind, you're left behind!"
It wasn't the most inspirational speech Forex had ever delivered, but it conveyed everything his weary legionaries needed to know.
"Keep pushing forward!"
He reached a square pillar and almost fell into it, turning at the last moment to lean his backpack against the blue and white tiles. A glance up showed a roof vaulted with broad arcs of plasteel, the rockcrete between cracked and showering trickles of dust. The bombardment was distant, targeting another part of the spaceport, but its effects were still obvious.
"Triarch, I'm reading multiple power armor signals in the vicinity,"
Alex reported from the next pillar along, about 30 meters closer to the track.
"Yes, the occupants are shooting at us,"
Forex bellowed back.
"No, there's even more."
Alex gestured with his free hand towards the tunnels and upwards.
"Hard to pinpoint, but scores, maybe hundreds of signals."
"From the tunnels? Are you sure?"
Forex asked, heart sinking. There was no other way out. Alex's reply was cut short by a beam of red energy that punched through the pillar and out of his chest.
"Las cannon!"
The warning was shouted from behind Forex, too late for Alex. The legionary's armour collapsed to its knees, and then toppled forward. The Auspex were still clasped in one hand, the green glow of its screen flickering on the tiles.
"Cover fire!"
commanded Forex. He rounded the pillar and let loose three rounds, aiming towards the closest blurs of yellow. A fusillade of fire erupted around him, and he broke cover, limping as fast as he could to Alex's body. A bolt round detonated on his backpack, spraying the back of his head with hot shards. As he ducked beneath the hole left by the las cannon blast, he felt blood trickling down his neck. He ignored it and prized the Auspex from Alex's fingers. First glance confirmed that there were readings in the direction of the tunnels and on the same plane as the Iron Warriors. Forex slid down to a crouch, the Auspex falling from his fingers. It had all been a ridiculous gamble. If he had really examined the plan, rather than just accepting it as Perturabo had instructed, he would have seen that it required a great many factors to come together to succeed. Too many, it had turned out. He checked his ammunition. 7 bolt rounds in his weapon. Another magazine of 20 maglocked to his thigh. He corrected himself, pulling the magazine from Alex's discarded bolter and fixing it to his spare. Another 6 bolts. It was hopeless. The only reasonable objective left was to kill as many foes as possible. Trying to escape would make that harder. Thorax was about to order his remaining warriors to hold fast and die fighting, when an orange blur on the screen of the Auspex at his feet drew his attention. "That's weapons discharge," he muttered to himself, leaning forward to retrieve the scanning device. He panned it back towards the tunnels. The energy signatures grew stronger. As though in confirmation, his vox buzzed into life, chiming 3 times to indicate a long-range command channel broadcast. He sub-vocalized the acceptance.
"This is Captain Rannoch, subordinate command of the Third Sphere. Nobody is supposed to be in this war zone. Who is this?"
"Triarch Forex. Were you expecting someone else?"
"Triarch? We thought you were all dead."
"We're not. We're in the monorail terminal, heavily engaged. What is your situation?"
"We've been positioned to stall a counterattack across this axis. There's a significant force of Imperial Fists and auxiliaries heading right past your position. Arrival time in less than 5 minutes."
"Can you come to us?"
"Not my orders, Triarch. If you command it, we'll..."
"No. No point risking your mission. We'll come to you."
"I'll send forward 5 squads to link up."
"Good. We'll have company when we arrive. Forex out."
Forex stood up, avoiding the hole in the pillar, and attached the Auspex to a belt clamp. He tuned his vox to general address.
"All legionaries make speed for the tunnels. Cover and advance by 3s. If you haven't got a 3, make pairs. Suppressive fire maximal. We have 2 minutes to get off this station."
Fire from the Iron Warriors intensified immediately. Forex looked around, finding his closest companions were Goral and a legionary called Dexolaro.
"On me!"
he called to them, moving to fire a burst through the las cannon hole.
"Dexolaro, move on!"
They covered the next 100 meters in that fashion, 2 covering the 3rd from cover to cover. Around them the rest of the force did likewise, though the return fire of the Imperial Fists grew in response, converging on those closest to the tunnels.
"Onto the rail and then run!"
bellowed Forex. A score of Space Marines broke cover with him, covering the 20 meters to the edge of the platform, while bolts screamed both ways around them. Forex almost fell into the gap, landing heavily against one of the other legionaries. As Iron Warriors threw themselves against the far platform edge to renew their fire, the next wave pounded across the platform. Forex heard a cry, and turned to see Goral down on one knee, thigh armor shattered, blood streaming. He tried to rise, but the Imperial Fists were merciless, their fire tracking towards him like a pack of wolves scenting wounded prey. Another round caught Goral square in the chest, a moment before a 3rd bolt exploded against his shoulder. 3 more successive eruptions slammed him backwards, his bolter flying from his grip. Forex saw him roll to his belly, clawing through his own blood. Through a shattered lens, the captain looked at the Triarch.
"Fall behind,"
wheezed Goral. He stopped crawling, reaching out to retrieve his weapon.
"Left behind."
Swearing, Forex looked away and broke into a run, limping along the rail amongst his warriors. He heard the snap of Goral's bolter as he resumed firing. It felt like an eternity before the darkness of the tunnel swallowed him, footfalls loud in the sudden confines. A gleam ahead, suit lamps, another couple of 100 meters away, dragged him onwards. He didn't look back. Chapter 28. Ultimate Sanction. Dawn's Hidden Army. A Banner Unfurled. Galleria Formidus. Senatorum Imperialis, 20 days since assault. It was not often that Amon felt the need to demonstrate obeisance to his superiors, but he did not resist his urge to kneel before the Captain General.
"I have failed you."
His confession felt small and worthless, lost in the expanse of the Galleria Formidus, which arched 100 meters over their heads and stretched 3 kilometers from end to end. Once a busy thoroughfare between the chambers of the Senatorum Imperialis and the Tower Auris of the Custodians, it was now deserted but for the pair.
"Failed?"
Valdor gestured for Amon to stand, but he ignored it, determined to make plain the depth of his contrition.
"The demonic peril continues. Escalates, in point of fact. Faith in the notion of the God Emperor is spreading more quickly than ever. Keela and her light-bearers number almost 1,000 devotees now, and more sects are making themselves publicly known, no longer fearing admonishment."
"Stand up!"
The 2 words were issued with such vehemence that Amon had to comply. The commander of the Legio Custodes clenched his jaw, and Amon prepared himself for his chastisement.
"This self-flagellation is unbecoming of a custodian."
Valdor turned and gestured for Amon to continue alongside him, towards the halls of the Senate, where he had been heading when Amon had caught up with him. His expression remained stern.
"I tasked you with investigating a single incident of untoward behaviour. You may have taken it upon yourself to launch a single-handed crusade against the rise of faith and demonic invasion, but that was never my command."
Amon accepted this in silence.
"I'm on my way to speak with Malkador. I am happy for you to join me. I do not think that would be the wisest course of action. The Regent clearly has his own agenda in this matter, whether he shares it or not."
Valdor looked at him sharply.
"You think he works against the will of the Emperor?"
Amon did not reply immediately, careful of his words. When they had advanced a few more strides, footfalls echoing along the great marble and gold transitway, he gave his answer.
"I do not believe any of us know the will of the Emperor. Not on any specific topic."
Amon controlled his tone, trying to avoid implication of accusation or complaint.
"We have only the past and our own counsel to guide us. Unless you have some hidden contact." "No. You are right,"
Valdor conceded with a sigh.
"I have not been in communion with the Emperor for some time. We can only forward guesses on how he would view the current situation, and in that we must rely on the wisdom of Malkador as much as our own."
"On other matters I would not hesitate to agree. But this is a direct attack against the Emperor, and also a flaunting of one of his most emphatic decrees.
I was at—" "Yes, Monarchia. However, I was at Nykaia, and yet I see even Rogel Dorn makes use of his Librarius again. The Emperor has not issued forth to chastise us for what you must agree would be perceived an even greater crime.
It all revolves around the same tenet of the Imperial truth, does it not?
Faith and psychers intricately linked. The Sisters of Silence had Keela for many months. They detected no psychic talent within her."
Amon checked the arguments that came to mind. Instead, he focused on practicalities.
"Keela is amassing too much power. If she continues, it will become harder to remove her."
"Remove her?" Valdor frowned.
"I thought she had some success in banishing these incursions."
"The incursions continue to grow in frequency and magnitude, so I would not make any claims to their efficacy.
In fact, the greater the influence of the Lightbearers, the more demonic activity has increased." "I understand that we have not yet seen anything more potent than these warp-flesh hybrids, is that true?"
"For the time being.
As Malkador speculated, it seems some physical focus is required. The Emperor's ward continues to keep at bay any pure manifestation of the Neverborn. Even so, it can only be a matter of time before the corrupted Primarchs will be able to breach the barrier. We should proceed on the assumption that Angron, Mortarion, and the others will soon directly attack the walls."
"I will pass that on to Rogel Dorn.
Malkador informed me that Keela believes there may be some central figure or group responsible for the occurrences."
"She has shared that theory with me."
"You disregard it?"
"No. but speculation is unproductive. The connection to the Death Guard and the power they now serve is plain. Whether they have operatives, sympathizers, or unwitting allies within the palace does not change matters.
This fascination with the Lightbearers seems to be personal. It is a distraction from the task of combating the demons.
The two are linked. Faith is growing in correlation to demonic presence. I have yet to determine if there is causality, and in which direction. I do not deny my personal distaste for the misguided belief in the Emperor as a deity, but we cannot ignore the evidence. Amon took a breath, readying himself for what had to come next. I believe that even if she is not directly responsible for the demonic attack, Keela's spreading influence is a threat. It is too late to simply incarcerate her again, and as we saw with Cinderman, she has associates that will find ways to aid her and promulgate her creed.
You propose to kill her?
Valdor asked the question without sign of surprise or judgment.
To be clear.
Yes, Captain General. If she is the source of the demonic breaches, they will end. If not, we have still curtailed the rise of a dangerous anti-imperial demagogue. They continued on in silence for several minutes. Amon knew not to prompt his superior for a reply, but instead reviewed his own plan for the execution, should Valdor ask for it. They were almost at the gate into the halls of the Senatorum Imperialis when Valdor spoke.
No. Keela is not to be harmed.
It was not in Amon's nature to question the judgment of his superiors, but he could not hold back his question.
What good do we achieve by letting her live?
The enemy of my enemy.
Valdor stopped, about 50 meters short of the steps leading down to the sealed gates. Two custodians stood guard at the portal, their auric armor partly concealed behind circuits of white that indicated they had been assigned as bodyguard to Malkador.
Horus sent an assassin after Keela, Valdor continued. Until she presents a provable threat to the immediate safety of the Emperor, I take guidance from that fact. If the renegades desire Keela dead, I suggest to you that it is in our interest to keep her alive. It may well be for the very acts we see now that her assassination was ordered.
I had not considered that, admitted Amon.
I will take command of the wider fight against the demons, in concert with the Silent Sisterhood.
He raised a finger to stall Amon's next words.
This is not admonishment, simply practicality. I need you to focus on the cause. The threat has expanded far beyond the original intent of your investigation. So I am commanding you to focus on that first purpose. Examine Keela and the Lightbearers, and determine with certainty whether there is a connection between them and the Neverborn attacks. If there is, we will deal with it appropriately. If not, we can make use of them and spare ourselves the distraction.
Amon knelt again, this time out of gratitude for a renewed sense of purpose.
As you will it, so I obey.
Himalaya, undisclosed location, 20 days since assault. Excitement rippled through the mustering base, moving from one camp to the next like a virus. The order to attack had arrived. For the Adaba Free Corps, the next 12 hours were spent waiting for their companion regiments to get ready. There was little enough for Zenobi and her companions to do, other than pack their kit bags and make sure they were ready to march. Their lost heavy weapons had been replaced by donations from other regiments, along with other supplies, such as the rations they'd been eating while awaiting their new mission. The muster point had been well victualled. Evidently Dorne had expected his reserves here, and perhaps in other places around the Himalaya, to be waiting for some time. Unlike with the looting of their first transport train, this time the troopers from Adaba didn't load themselves down with unnecessary supplies. They took only power packs, grenades, and anything else that could be used for fighting. For them, the war was almost over. The day of glory upon them.
"Aren't you off to see your lover?"
asked Member, when he and Zenobi were left washing the squad pans after breakfast.
"No. We said goodbye every night, as though it was the last time. There's no need to make this difficult."
"You mean more difficult?"
"No. This is what we've been waiting for. I'm happy it's here."
Egru brought them together to address the entire corps. A couple of armoured command transports had been liberated from one of the other formations, and it was from atop one of these that the general captain spoke, voice amplified by the voxmeters below.
"Now is the day of our first and last test. Rogaldorn has sent word for the reserve force to advance on the Lionsgate spaceport. It is solely contested. The strength of the Imperial Fists and their allies matched against the might of the Iron Warriors and their supporters."
She paced along the roof of the vehicle, baton in hand.
"The timing of the attack will be crucial, I have been told. This force, this mechanized column, will arrive along an axis that will turn the flank of the War Master's forces. A counterattack from within the palace will be mounted as the blow from this army falls, catching the Iron Warriors unawares."
She stopped her walking and took the baton in both hands, staring down at the ranked squads of her companies.
"Lord Dorne has impressed upon the command staff the necessity of this attack. It is the engagement for which he has been waiting, one to which we have been delivered by fate to witness. The position of the Emperor's forces will be untenable if this attack fails. I do not need to tell you how happy that makes me. This is the battle that our cause has needed. This is the opportunity to prove ourselves that we have wanted for 7 years. Some of you will be detailed with special operational preparations. The remainder of the Free Corps will stand ready for my commands."
She bowed her head, and her voice was barely audible, even over the voxmeters.
"Soon, the effort and sacrifice and blood we have shed will be made worthy."
The companies were dismissed, and a tense quiet descended on their encampment, pregnant with expectation. These last hours were the worst for Zenobi, far more excruciating than the weeks and months that had come before. To be so close, and yet not quite at their goal, made every minute tick past with torturous slowness. By midday, the reserve force was almost ready to move out. A few scouting companies had been dispatched already to provide reconnaissance on the route to the Imperial Palace. The Free Corps made their way to the main highway, bringing their new las cannons, heavy bolters, mortars, and other weapons with them. Running the length of the enclosed base, a viaduct gave them a vantage point that looked out across the regiments, both historic and newly raised. Zenobi and First Squad received the call to attend to Egwu. She started shaking as they marched along the road for the head of their column. Memories flocked for attention, of family and friends, time spent on the line, and the experiences she'd had since leaving Adaba. All of it crammed into her thoughts, bringing her to that time and place. So much labour, so much loss, all in the name of the Emperor. It was this thought she held on to as she clambered to the top of the command vehicle, assisted by Memba and Ketai. Egwu waited there, Jawahir alongside. The Integrity High Officer spared a brief smile for the standard-bearer, and with a flick of a finger directed her to place herself next to the General Captain. The smog of hundreds of engines blackened the sky, adding to the gloom of the filth-choked heavens. The thunder of tanks and transports, some the size of city blocks, created a deafening wave of sound that reverberated from the mountainsides, an assault on ears already numbed by the winds of the high Himalaya. The growl of machine voices all but drowned out human shouts, even those amplified by voxmeters. Electronic clarions howled into the whirl of noise, sounding the advance or stand to, their modulated calls overlapping. Everything was sudden movement, dust billowing from treads and boots alike.
"This is it."
General Captain Egwu did not raise her voice, but her words were carried by the tongues of those under her command.
"Everyone stand ready."
Beside her, Zenobi Adedeji fidgeted with the cover of the banner she carried, eyes flicking between her company commander and the scene of organized bedlam being enacted around the troopers from Adaba Hive.
"Everything we have done, the oaths we have sworn, the hardships we have endured has led to this moment!"
"Now," Egwu shouted, not simply to be heard, but filled with passion. Her remaining eyes stared wide amongst the burn scars that covered most of her face, fresh tissue pink against her dark skin.
"Now is the time we strike at the enemy!
Our families labored and died to deliver us to this place. Our courage and determination has carried us this far. We may not live beyond this day, but our deeds will.
Now, asked Zenobi, her voice quavering with emotion, a shaking hand reaching towards the cover of the standard.
Yes, said the general captain. Now.
The cover fluttered from Zenobi's grasp, and the banner unfurled as she waved the pole, greeted by a roar from the troopers arrayed along the roadway. The voxmeter picked up her cry as the cloth straightened to reveal a red flag, a black stylized eye embroidered upon it, the names of thousands of Adaba families stitched in long lines beneath.
"For freedom! For Adaba!"
she shouted, as Lasfire ripped into life around her. A series of sharp detonations echoed across the base, plumes of yellow fire erupting within the tank columns and artillery batteries from demolition charges concealed that morning.
For the War Master!
Chapter 29 Dawn capitulates. Shattered iron. A terrible revelation. Bab Bastion. 21 days since assault. Standing on the central platform of the Grand Borealis Strategium, Dawn turned his head one way and then the other, sensing a change in the atmosphere. It had been the first time in a week since he had been able to return, forced to lend his physical presence to the most pressing battles for the Wall. His brothers did likewise, each of them needed in more places than they could reinforce, moving from one battle zone to the next without pause. Only the necessity of retaining his overview of the siege had brought him back. There was muttering. Not the quiet conversation of reports being made, communications being passed along, murmurs of disquiet. He saw Imperial Army adjutants hurrying from one display to another, exchanging concerned looks. The few remaining Imperial Fists officers, those with fresh wounds or older injuries that prevented them from fighting, gathered in conspiratorial clusters. One of them, Captain Vorst, broke away and limped across the Strategium as fast as his augmetic leg allowed. Dawn regarded him without comment as he ascended the steps to the command platform. The captain's hand rose to his plastron and fell quickly in a hurried salute.
Lord Dawn, all contact has been lost with the Lionsgate spaceport.
The agitated manner of the equerry was at odds with the normally calm demeanor that made him so suited for his position. Even with such momentous news, Dawn could not allow any laxity in discipline.
Steady yourself, Captain.
Dawn's gaze took in the great sweep of the Strategium.
Others are looking to you for example.
Apologies, Lord Dawn.
Vorst straightened as best he could with a crude hunk of metal for a leg, banging his fist to his chest in sharper salute.
When was the last communication? Dawn asked.
30 minutes ago. Lieutenant Commander Hager reported that the enemy were within 5 kilometers of the sky bridges, my lord. Captain Sigismund had drawn down all remaining forces from the Star Spear to contain the threat.
And what are the enemy dispositions now?
Unknown, my lord.
Vorst glanced up at the long line of sensor terminals on the level above.
All comms and scanners are being jammed.
How? We have the most powerful, most sophisticated surveyor arrays in the palace.
The scale of such an event explained his equerry's discomfort.
It seems that the spaceport's own scan and docking systems have been corrupted, my lord. Inverted, so that they are blocking every conceivable spectrum analysis and communications frequency. It's silenced and blacked out every link we have with the forces inside.
Dawn swallowed back his immediate reaction, which was to demand how such a thing was possible. If there was an explanation, it would have been offered. Even if highly speculative. Another recent loss of communication came back to mind.
Any further report on the relief force at Station Ultima?
Scattered vox chatter. As previously reported, it seems there was a rogue element introduced into the relief camp, my lord. Nobody is sure how. They attacked the camp from within. It will be another 18 hours before they are in any state to mount an offensive.
Dawn ground his teeth, fists clenched. The timing was disastrous. Though he had other reserves of much less strength, the Ultima Force had been ideally positioned to strike behind the siege lines at just such a moment. It seemed more than coincidence that traitors should attack from within, just as his need was greatest. Similar stories had been trickling in from across the palace. Imperial army units not responding to orders, others disappearing entirely. Turncoats, from a few dozen individuals to whole regiments, were turning on their companions, gunning down former comrades, bringing their tanks and artillery to bear upon loyalist positions. A few incidents had become a much deadlier phenomenon over the last 12 hours. All was building to a long-anticipated crescendo.
"This is it," said the Primarch. "He will be coming now."
"It is what, my lord? Who is coming?"
"Perturabo, the Lord of Iron. This is his masterstroke, he thinks. Blinded, cut off, our forces are ripe to be swept away by his arrival. A self-indulgent finale to his victory."
"Why now?"
"Sigismund has been too focused on the bridges. He has forgotten he needed to defend the Star Spear as well."
Dorn let his pent-up anger free, slamming a fist into the palm of his other hand. Vorst withdrew a step, aghast at this unusual display from his lord.
"This has always been a battle for the docks, not the bridges. With the upper guns overrun or blinded, my traitor brother can bring in as many ships as he wants. He can bring in whatever strength he needs to overrun the spaceport terminals."
"Titan transports," said Vorst, hushed by the notion.
"Or a battle barge," snarled Dorn.
He turned his gaze upwards, as though looking into orbit, imagining his brother on the bridge of the Iron Blood. Would he be brooding or exultant? His first victory on Terra was close at hand. How did it feel, taking that step closer to the inner palace?
"Orders, Lord Dorn."
The Primarch realized it was the second time of asking.
"Alert all forces at the Lion's Gate. Prepare supporting fire and sally attacks to cover the withdrawal at the spaceport. Keep trying to signal Sigismund. He is to order full strategic retreat to the bridges and then to the Lion's Gate."
"Retreat?"
"The spaceport has fallen, Vorst. It is just a matter of time and how many of our warriors we can extricate from under the enemy guns. Every soldier saved today will stand to fight tomorrow."
He strode towards the steps, reaching for the helmet that hung on a stand at the back of the platform.
"You are leaving, Lord Dorn?"
Vorst hurried after him.
"Yes. Prepare my gunship and my huskarls."
He had matched wit and will with Perturabo across star systems, siege lines and palace walls. Now it was time to face his brother in person. Lionsgate Spaceport, Tropifex Exterior, 21 days since assault. Sigismund's sword sheared through the bolter of the iron warrior that faced him. The blade detonated the round in the breach, so that his sword was aflame as it cut deep into the legionary's helm. The warrior of the 4th Legion stumbled back, blood flying. Sigismund followed, relentless, driving the point into his target's throat. Around him, bolter and blade made a cacophony of war, but he fought as though in a bubble of silence. The battle had sprawled out into the concourses and galleries around the sky bridges, so that gunships and anti-air cannons roared and thundered above, while gun batteries upon the skin of the spaceport tracked fire across the melee, seeking foes of opportunity. Loyalist and traitor were too embroiled with each other to mark friend and foe apart, like two combatants with blades in each other's guts and hands clamped to each other's throats. Striding past the falling corpse of his enemy, Sigismund looked not at the next iron warrior, but beyond him to the great conflagration that had erupted around the monorail terminals and the immense archways that led to the outer platforms. Dreadnoughts and tanks duelled along the kilometres-wide station front, while in the further distance thousands of others ebbed and flowed like a tide of power armour, as the last of both forces committed to this final battle. Far below, where mortals could breathe the polluted air, hundreds of thousands of Imperial Army troopers toiled against the horde of turncoats, beasts and mutants. But their war was without victory, even if the cost continued to rise. The fate of the spaceport would be decided in the next hours at the gates of the sky bridges. Ducking beneath a chainsword, Sigismund fired his bolt pistol into the faceplate of a legionary, following the bolts with the edge of his blade. He let another snarl-toothed weapon ricochet from his angled pauldron. The blow deflected away from his head, exposing the wielder's neck to a downward cut.
"Where is Abaddon?"
he cried, letting his frustration free through his external address. There had been no sign of the Sons of Horus at the point of the enemy attack. His vox crackled, but not in reply to his challenge. The voice that came through the static was that of Lieutenant Commander Hager.
"Captain, I have an incoming transmission from Lord Dorne."
Sigismund paused in his assault, taken aback by the news. There had been no communication in or out of the spaceport for more than an hour.
"I stand ready to receive."
The static crackle increased as the link was established. Lord Dorne's voice was tinny and distant. The surrounding clatter of small arms and crash of weapons on power armor swelled around the Templar.
"Order immediate withdrawal from the Lionsgate spaceport."
Shocked, Sigismund almost missed an axe swinging from the melee towards his chest. He parried at the last moment, stepping back to allow Garand and Elgaray to pass him on the left and right, taking the brunt of the fight from him.
"This is their last effort, my lord. We can hold. The cost is too high. This is not our last battle to fight. It is only the first wall." "Abaddon is here, my lord, and other commanders of the foe. It is of no consequence."
Bitterness entered the Primarch's voice.
"Do not let the lies of Keeler lead you astray a second time."
Sigismund choked back his argument, knowing that he had nothing more to say to his gene father than had been said already. Dorne must have taken his silence as objection. His tone was fierce when he next spoke.
"These warriors' lives are not to spend for your superstition, Sigismund, nor are they currency for your personal glory. You want to hurl yourself at Abaddon? You have my leave. Discharge your last efforts as you wish, but do not call it honour. Do not call it duty."
Darkness fell upon Sigismund, but it was not a product of his gene father's words, but a literal shadow. He sensed the fighting diminish around him, a pause as though both armies took a breath together. He looked up and saw a silhouette against the purple dusk-lit clouds. An immense starship descended from orbit, its prow aflame with friction heat, energy discharge crackling across its dark hull. Not a single cannon fired in defiance of its landing. The orbital batteries seized, blinded, or destroyed.
"My lord, we have been fools,"
Sigismund told Dorne, voice breaking, recognizing the warship as plumes of fire carried to the upper docks.
"This was never to siege the bridges. All was a ploy to clear the defences of the high dock."
"Too late the truth comes to you," said the Empress Praetorian, censure dripping from every word. "It is the Iron Blood, Perturabo's flagship."
Sigismund looked up again at the shadow passing across the heavens, its plasma engines leaving wakes of azure. At full magnification, he could see launch bays opening, gunships pouring forth like wasps from a nest. There would be other ships coming, bringing overwhelming force to bear directly from orbit. Would Ran have allowed it to happen? Sigismund would not accept that this was failure. The spaceport could never hold forever. It was always his lord's intent to slow the enemy and then withdraw. He brought up his sword, touching its hilt to his brow as he closed his eyes, trying to find the peace he sought. Instead, he saw the face of Keeler. He heard her voice telling him he was the Emperor's chosen. The port would fall, but there would be other battlefields. It was up to him to make sure the greatest of the enemy did not survive to see them.
"What is your command, my lord?"
he asked, opening his eyes.
"Unchanged. The flow of time bleeds the foe greater than any wound. Hold the bridges just long enough for the withdrawal."
A great shout burst across the battle, bellowed from thousands of voxmeters and external address systems. Accompanied by the crashing of fists and the thrum of revving engines, the Iron Warriors gave voice to welcome their arriving Primarch.
"Iron within! Iron without!"
With their battle cry rebounding from the walls, echoing from the broken plascrete and burning wrecks, the Iron Warriors surged again. Lionsgate Spaceport, Tropifex Skin Zone, 21 days since assault. Forex had spent weeks at a time aboard ship during the Great Crusade and the subsequent war against the Emperor, and had never thought anything of his confinement. Emerging into the open air of the Lionsgate spaceport's primary skybridge terminal made him realize how closed in he had been for the previous 20 days. Days spent in constant fighting, just one mistake from death. Fighting continued below, about 20 stories down and a kilometer away, It seemed that not a balcony, bridge, or mezzanine was not home to an ironclad warrior or ochre-armoured foe. Armoured vehicles slashed through the periphery, while cannonades from support battalions rained fire onto the bridges themselves. Among the metal of his brothers, he spied a thrust of red, aimed at the heart of the Imperial Fist's line, a smudge of grey next to it. It seemed impossible that for all the time he had fought inside the port, only now were the bridges being seized. He cared nothing for it, wearied beyond imagining in body and spirit. He longed to suck in lungfuls of air, but he was still 11 kilometres up. Unsealing his armour would be a mistake, a salvaged Imperial Fist's helm joined to his plate. He wanted to spit the dryness from his mouth and wipe the congealed sweat from his face. Instead, he let himself slump to his knees, bolter in one hand, blood-caked knife in the other. His suit sighed with him, fluctuating power readings scrolling across his visor. Like everyone else, his eye was drawn to the massive starship descending to the uppermost tower of the star spear, wreathed in flame, accompanied by a shower of shooting stars as orbital debris fell with it. The pyrotechnics of its approach were greater than any celebratory display. Sparks of blue betrayed the presence of descending attack craft, a swarm of fireflies falling from a flame-wreathed behemoth. The Iron Blood, seat of Perturabo. The Primarch now come to claim his prize on the backs of his warrior's efforts. The urge to spit returned, this time out of disgust. Kroger's whole plan had been a simplistic disaster waiting to happen, and only the bloody-mindedness of the Iron Warriors, fighters like Goral, had wrested any kind of victory from the mess. Now the conquering Lord of Iron would arrive and finish the job his sons had started. After so many years of other legions using the Fourth as their battering ram, it sickened Forex to think of his own genefather doing the same. Telemetric transponders warned him of the approach of more Iron Warriors, alighting from an industrial conveyor a few dozen metres away. 6 squads emerged, battle-damaged and wary. Forex recognised their leader immediately, and pushed himself to his feet to raise a hand in greeting.
"Stonemort, I didn't think I'd see you so far from your guns."
Sultan Vol Bronn signalled to his warriors to take positions at the wall, overlooking the platforms below, before breaking away to approach the Triarch.
"Thought you were dead," said Bronn. "Should be, by any sane calculation,"
Forex replied with a shake of the head.
"If I suspected Kroger of any intelligence, I would say he intended to have me trapped and slain in that murder zone. But he's too stupid for that kind of politics."
"He seems to have your measure. Who else has come this close to seeing you dead?"
Forex just grunted, not willing to concede anything in favour of Kroger. Had it not been for Perturabo's injunction, Forex would have not been forced into a suicidal infiltration.
"Stupid, but standing on the brink of victory,"
the Stonewart continued. He pointed across the sky bridges, where, level with the terminal of the spaceport, the Lion's Gate itself stood tall and undaunted.
"This is just the first wall to cross. The gate itself is the prize."
"Prize? There is no prize left."
Forex looked past the bastions of the Lion's Gate to the flare of the last shields of the Aegis above the Sanctum Imperialis.
"Not for us mortals. You've seen the tides of this war, the things that have changed. We're lubricant in a war machine built for gods, as expendable as bolts and power cells."
The Stonewart said nothing, offered no argument, so Forex continued.
"My brothers. Maybe some of them would still fight for me, but most have their eyes turned up, seeking a higher glory, wanting to elevate themselves. This legion isn't worth my blood anymore. Perturabo, he's as much a danger to us as the enemy. His temper will be the ending of us yet, and we'll follow him into the abyss despite it. Horus!"
Forex laughed bitterly, tasting the acid in his mouth.
"He and his gods see only the Emperor. We are ants under their boots as they fight, thinking to sway the course of the galaxy with a bolter and a blade. A stone in the ultimate wall will have more influence over the end of this war than you or I."
"You're not coming with me,"
said the Stonewart, pointing to a set of steps that ran down from the overlook to the main terminal.
"I've been ordered to flank the Imperial Fist's position, while Kroger, Khan, Abaddon and Layak lead the final assault.
Forex looked back up at the Iron Blood, and then to his warriors, such as remained, standing in the darkness of the terminal archway. The battle continued to rage below, the reports of bolters as sharp then as they were the first time Forex had been in battle. The flare of laser and shell lit the fog below, winds carving glimpses of firefights and melees ranging across the rampways and rails of the kilometres-long sky bridges. The battle might be concluded before Perturabo arrived. That at least would give Forex some satisfaction.
"Form on me!"
he called to his warriors. They responded wearily but without complaint, falling in to rough squads around their commander.
"You found something to fight for,"
said the Stonewrought.
"No,"
Forex told him as he started towards the stair, Bronn falling into step beside him.
"But I would rather win a battle fighting for nothing than lose one."
Basilica Ventura, Western Processional, 21 days since assault. It was with a mixture of disdain and foreboding that Amon watched the faithful gathering on the processional just to the south of the Basilica Ventura. More than 10,000 disciples, each of them carrying some form of homemade lamp, a sea of flickering lights that stretched along the walled transitway. From a ledge walk around the outside of a former Assayer hub, Amon had an unblocked view of the 3-kilometer-long processional, from the ruins of the Basilica Ventura all the way to the westmost gate. It was a commonly used route for those approaching the Senatorum Imperialis for petition, though of late much of its length had been populated with refugee families and scavengers. It was very public, which was the reason Keeler had given for the choice of venue for this unprecedented gathering. Convinced that the Lightbearers were innocent of any connection to the demonic attacks, she saw the expansion of their numbers as the only defence against the Neverborn. It reminded him too much of Monarchia. How long before they erected their first monument to the Emperor? Statuary abounded within the palace, of philosophers and warlords aplenty, but none of the Emperor himself. A city had been levelled because it had been constructed in praise of the Master of Mankind's divinity. The Imperial Palace wore the mantle of fortress of late, after so many guises. But what of those days after the defeat of Horus and the lifting of the siege? Would the Emperor be forced to walk among cathedrals raised to his false godhood? Or would he have to break apart every stone of his own greatest work to be rid of the taint? Amon had secured a copy of the Lectitio Divinitatis, studying it in the hopes of learning more about the cult that took its name. It was a mixture of truth and wishful thinking, with many passages expanding upon the original doctrines that took it into the realm of pure speculation. That it was the work of multiple authors was clear to see in the various sections, each seemingly trying to outdo the last in pomposity and self-reflection. Despite his deepest misgivings, he was powerless. This phenomenon had to be allowed to run its course, barring direct intervention from the Emperor, so that the folly of religion would be made plain to all once again. Already Keeler had passed on information about a faction within the Lightbearers that was demanding she and Olivier were vocal in denouncing other cults around the Imperial Palace. Infighting would inevitably follow, and internecine debate could well become another civil war. He corrected himself. Not entirely powerless. 12 custodians and a detachment from the Silent Sisterhood stood by to assist, should his suspicions of the sect and its parade prove correct. Never before had so many gathered together in singular purpose, and it seemed to Amon that if anything was amiss among the rituals of the Lightbearers, it would become clear today. He would have preferred more support, but ongoing regular unrest, as well as more immaterial incidents, kept the much diminished force of the Legio Custodes spread thin across the Imperial Palace. The very real threat of the demon Primarchs gaining ingress to the palace occupied the thoughts of Valdor and the Silent Sisterhood. He could see Keeler upon a platform erected on the far side of the processional, flanked by address systems to carry her voice to the growing mass around her. She had not confided in him the nature of her sermon. The custodian also noted several dozen uniformed troopers near the base of the platform, weapons in hand. How they were at the procession and not at the walls did not concern him, but their presence was a further complication. A click behind Amon drew his attention to the concealed doorway through which he had passed to come to his observation post, one of many secret routes the Legio Custodes maintained throughout the Imperial Palace. He turned, expecting another custodian, and was surprised to see Malkador framed in the doorway. A flash of gold and white in the vestibule behind betrayed the presence of at least one guard, though the custodian remained within the building when the door swung shut behind the regent.
"Bracing weather,"
said Malkador, robe and thin hair tousled by the strong wind. He stayed close to the door, unwilling to approach the wall-less edge.
"Is this what the Emperor desires?"
Amon asked, gesturing with his spear towards the converging masses.
"There is power here."
The regent closed his eyes, head tilted back. His lips barely moved as he spoke.
"A great pressure from without pushes upon the telethesic ward. Demons beyond counting expend their existence to break through. Sorcery abounds in the camps of the Dark Mechanicum, the Death Guard and the Word-Bearers. Magnus is finally committing his psychic might to the assault."
Malkador opened his eyes, a last glimmer of gold in the irises as he looked straight at Amon.
"The Emperor has greater concerns than a few hymns and prayers."
"The Neverborn are drawn to power."
"Yes, but it can also keep them at bay. If I could be definitive, I would tell you for certain that this gathering of faith was good or bad. In such matters, there is no certainty, only intent."
"And you trust the intent of these people?"
"I trust Keeler, as I told you before."
Amon returned his attention to the woman at the front of the platform. She had started to address the crowd, the words audible to his enhanced senses, though he paid them little mind.
"The webway was only one means for protecting mankind from the lure of chaos," said Malkador, taking a step forward, eyeing the drop with some concern. "The Emperor thought that the best means to break the dark powers was to starve them of energy at the source."
"Mastering the secrets of the webway would have allowed humanity to traverse the stars without the warp. No warp, no navigators, no psychers."
"Yet psychers are still born among us."
Malkador tapped the side of his head, reminding Amon that he spoke to one with such abilities. His next words materialized directly inside the custodian's thoughts. It was not pleasant, something he had only experienced from the Emperor previously.
"What would we do with all of those psychers?"
"The Astronomicon is power."
Amon realized the meaning of Malkador's question.
"With the webway, there is no need for the Emperor to project the light of the heavens. The void would fall dark."
Malkador edged closer, fingers tight around his staff as he peered down to the processional far below, people still making their way to the gathering.
"What if that psychic power was used by the Emperor, rather than projected?"
Malkador shrugged.
"If our base emotions feed the dark powers, what of our common humanity?"
"The webway project failed. This is idle speculation."
"Not so. Not for me. Dawn wrestles with the logistics of waging war across a continent-sized fortress city. I contend with the implications of a battle that rages over the boundless realms of the immaterial."
Leaning on his staff, he sighed, gaze turning towards the distant speaker.
"If we cannot stifle the gods' power in the warp, then what better means to defeat them than to channel it away? Or perhaps, given sufficient psychic energy, could the Emperor weaponize the Astronomicon rather than light the warp? Could he purge it?"
"This discussion is a distraction. I do not understand why you came here."
"To see it for myself, to see faith growing in the flesh, even as I feel it in my thoughts."
Malkador smiled, but there was no humor in his eyes.
"You see, everyone is a psyker. Everyone has a tiny connection to the warp. Even you. Except the Silent Sisters, of course, and a relative handful of others. Instinct, empathy, sympathy. They are products of the soul, communicating in infinitesimally small ways with the souls of others. What if a force bound not just the powerful psychers together, but every soul in humanity?"
"That force is faith, you think?"
Amon was not sure he could deal with the nuances of Malkador's suggestion. It was as outside his expertise as algae harvesting or Martian theological poetry. You want to see if faith has power? Is that why you've let this folly grow so wildly?
Let us call it weapons research, said the regent.
The emperor forbade his own worship.
And the moment he makes known his will to end this, I will order the extermination of every last member of the Light-Bearers and any other cult.
Malkador drew up straighter.
Until that time, I am the regent, and I allow it to continue.
Amon realized the speaker had changed. Olivier had now taken center stage and was pontificating to his followers. Something he had said had pricked Amon's suspicion.
Is something wrong, custodian?
Yes. Amon reviewed the last few seconds of his unconscious memory. Olivier just said to give praise to the Emperor. The Creator is hope in the heart of every person.
So?
I heard the same the first time I encountered one of the Halfborn. The corporal said, He is the life within death, the breath on your lips, the hope in your heart. And I heard him call the Emperor the life within death earlier, but it did not trigger the memory.
Titles from the Holy Book, perhaps?
No. I have read three different copies, and not one of them contained those specific phrases. Amon started towards the doorway. You are about to find out just how dangerous faith can be, Lord Regent. Lionsgate Spaceport. Interstitial Bridges. 21 days since assault. It was foolish to think that a single battle would change the course of a war already 7 years progressed, but as he advanced along a boulevard filled with the wrecks of Imperial fists, iron warriors, and Imperial